Welcome to another Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan of ABC News Nightline, and I will be moderating. Two teams, two against two, two tables. We'll be debating this motion: diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. Now, I want to make clear that this is not a panel discussion or a seminar. This really is a contest. It is a debate. It is a competition of ideas and wit and possibly humor and charisma. We'll see how it goes. But most of all, it's a contest of persuasion, because these debaters are here to change your minds. By the time the debate ends, you will have voted twice, once before the debate begins and once again at the end, telling us whether you side with the motion or against the motion. And I just want to point out to our radio audience, because they cannot see the hall here, that there's a little bit of a buzz about the fact that one of our guests is the former Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, who's about four rows up. It occurs to me, sir, by saying four rows up, I may have ruined the undisclosed location rule. I apologize, but I assume that we're past that. So, to round one, opening statements, our motion is diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. Our first speaker arguing for the motion, Liz Cheney, is a lawyer, and under the George W. Bush administration, she was Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs. Earlier in her career, she served at the U.S. Agency for International Development. She was in Poland, among other places. And curiously, Liz, in a debate that is about diplomacy, you have done quite a bit of diplomacy in your time.
Well, don't hold it against me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Liz Cheney.
Thank you. Dan and I are here with the task of convincing you why diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. And I think it's important, as we begin thinking about this issue, to stop for a moment and ask yourselves, what is our current diplomacy with Iran? What's the current state of affairs? The current state of affairs is that the Obama administration has privately and publicly offered direct, unconditional talks to the Iranian regime. The Iranian regime has failed to respond. So as of now, there is no diplomacy with Iran. There are no talks. Now, as you think tonight about your vote with respect to this resolution, one of the really important things to consider, which the Obama administration has not been considering, is the history of American efforts to reach out to the Iranians. And I wanted to just run through for you tonight a few of the high points of that history. In 1979, National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski met in Algiers with the Iranian foreign minister, prime minister, and defense minister. And according to a note-taker who was present in the meeting, Brzezinski told the Iranians, quote, "We will accept your revolution, we will recognize your country, we'll recognize your government, we'll sell you all the weapons that we contracted to sell the Shah." 3 days later, the U.S. Embassy in Tehran was seized. In 1980, Warren Christopher negotiated the Algiers Accords with the Iranian regime. The Iranians agreed to take no further hostile actions against the United States. 3 months later, they seized new American hostages in Lebanon. 1 year later, they attacked the U.S. Embassy in Beirut. And 3 years later, they killed 241 Marines in their barracks in Beirut. In 1996, Iran was responsible for bombing Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia, killing 19 American soldiers. Despite this attack in the late 1990s, Washington decided it was time to try again to extend yet another hand to the Iranians to build a new relationship. And the president and the secretary of state gave speeches essentially apologizing to the Iranians for past American behavior. In response, the Iranian supreme leader said these apologies were, quote, too little, too late. 2004, the European Union III completed the Paris Agreement with the Iranians, in which they promised to suspend enrichment activities. August of 2005, Ahmadinejad was elected. They announced they were continuing their enrichment activities, and the Russians prevented us from attaining any real sanctions against the Iranians at the United Nations. In 2007, the National Intelligence Estimate, parts of which were declassified, showed there is one thing, actually, that the Iranians did respond to. Although the Iranians continued to enrich uranium, they did halt other parts of their nuclear weapons program in the immediate aftermath of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. To sum up this history, let me quote from the man who was actually the note-taker at that first meeting in Algiers in 1979. He's our current Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates. Describing this meeting recently, Secretary Gates said, quote, every administration since then has reached out to the Iranians in one way or another, and all have failed. In closing, let me just say that the history of our attempts to reach out to Iran offer us lessons about the three things that might actually work in terms of inducing Iranian efforts, in terms of stopping Iranian efforts to attain a nuclear weapon. We've got to have a credible threat of the use of force if diplomacy fails. There have to be crippling economic sanctions that impose a significant cost on Iranian attempts to attain a weapon. And we've got to have a timeline so that the diplomacy doesn't drag on forever. None of those things characterize our current diplomacy with the Iranians. And therefore, diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. Thank you.
Arguing against the motion, our other diplomat in this debate, Nicholas Burns, who is now a professor in the practice of diplomacy at the Harvard Kennedy School. But for 27 years, he served five presidents. Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Burns.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We hope to convince you tonight, Ken and I, that actually it's very difficult to say that diplomacy is going nowhere with Iran when we haven't started diplomacy with Iran. I have something to say about this and some familiarity about this. I was for 3 years the point person on Iran, on the negotiations perspective for Iran, for the United States government, for President Bush. And I never met an Iranian government official during those 3 years, with the exception of a couple of meetings in Baghdad between, and these were public meetings, between our ambassador and the Iranian ambassador to Iraq. There were no sustained negotiations between the United States of America and the Iranian government. It is important to remember a little bit of the history that Liz reviewed. We've had 3 decades of a non-relationship with Iran. It's the most unusual diplomatic or non-diplomatic relationship we have in the world. Since the Iranian Revolution, there have been times when American officials have talked to Iranian officials, but there have been no sustained negotiations on the nuclear issue and even on any other issue for many, many years. But the Obama administration is about to test the proposition that perhaps we should have a more extended discussions with the Iranians, not because we're acting out of naivete, not because we're weak, not because diplomacy is feckless, but because it's in our self-interest to gather information and see if there's some way to maneuver the Iranians, pressure the Iranians away from a nuclear weapons future. And what would that negotiation look like? The United States, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China would be on one side of the table, with Iran on the other. Why try diplomacy? First, it's the only way we will ever know if a peaceful outcome is possible. It's the only way we'll ever know if we can avoid a war in the Middle East. Second, we already have 2 wars underway in the greater Middle East, in Iraq and Afghanistan. Unless it is absolutely necessary, do we Americans want to embark on a third war? Third, negotiations will actually isolate the Iranians. It'll put the United States on the offensive for the first time in a long, long time, and it will actually increase international leverage against the Iranian government. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick Burns, arguing against the motion. Arguing now for the motion that diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere, Dan Senor, a man who I know put his own security where his mouth was. I know this because in the early days of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, I kept running into Dan Senor on my trips there. He located himself there full-time to work as spokesman for the coalition provisional government. He is now considerably better groomed than he was during that Baghdad summer. He is on the National Council. He's on the Council of Foreign Relations and has co-founded the Foreign Policy Initiative and is here to argue that diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. Dan Senor.
Right. Thank you. I just want to pick up on something Nick said, that it is hard to say that diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere if it hasn't really begun. I would say he's right, the second part of that, that it really hasn't begun. But it's not for lack of trying. I think it's important to evaluate not only the history that Liz went through, in terms of the decades of efforts to negotiate and deal with Iran, but also actually look at just the last few months and the signals that this administration has sent to Iran even before this administration took power. 2007, 2008, while this country was consumed with this fresh face on the scene, Senator Barack Obama, so was the world. There was deep, intense election night coverage in the United States, but also on Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya and the Arab satellite channels and the different news broadcasts throughout the Middle East. They actually covered primary, they had their own primary election night specials in the region. They were consumed with it for a number of reasons, not the least of which is so much of Barack Obama's message was a clear rejection of U.S. foreign policy under George Bush. In fact, in the Democratic primary, one of his sharpest criticisms against Senator Hillary Clinton at the time was that she was basically a closet hawk, that she would represent somewhat of a continuation of Bush foreign policy. And the issue he specifically drew contrast with her on that was Iran, because she had supported some tough sanctions that related to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. And the American people overwhelmingly voted for this new face, this change, this rejection, if you will, which was a centerpiece of now President Obama's campaign, overwhelmingly voted and sent a message to the world that there would be a new policy. He then, in his first 100 days, made good on his commitment on Iraq, which is basically to move along some sort of timeline for withdrawal, which was a big issue for the Iranian government. He has, in recent weeks, been very assertive about his plans for pursuing aggressively a two-state solution on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And then finally, and most importantly, he has issued an unconditional invitation to sit down with the Iranian government, in defiance, I might add, of three Security Council resolutions that call on the Iranian government to halt its nuclear program. President Obama is putting himself out there. He is really exposing himself. The only problem is, despite all this, against all this backdrop, the Iranian government still has not returned the call. So it is true that diplomacy has not begun, but it is not for lack of trying. As Dennis Ross, who's currently advising President Obama on Iran policy today, has said in a report that was issued by the Bipartisan Policy Center late last year, if we have to chase the Iranians to the table, then any hope of diplomacy is off the table. Thank you.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. The motion up for debate is, diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. Stay with us. Finally, arguing against the motion that diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere, Ken Pollack, whose point of agreement with Dan Senor back in 2002 was his book, Threatening Storm, which argued for the toppling of the Saddam Hussein regime. Since then, he has written about Iran, arguing for negotiations. And his most recent book, A Path Out of the Desert, A Grand Strategy for America in the Middle East, makes the same point, and I must say, because I've read it, is a terrific read. Ladies and gentlemen, Ken Pollack.
I thought I'd start by talking a little bit about the potential for a peaceful resolution. And we need to recognize we don't really know what the Iranians want. We don't really know what they'd be willing to give. And in direct answer to Dan's question of what might it take, why have they not taken the choice already? Well, we haven't put the choice to them directly. The choice that we need to put to them is a very simple one. You get to have a good, thriving economy, which is ultimately what the people of Iran want, or you get a nuclear weapon. But you don't get both. I agree that this regime in Iran is not yet ready to sit down and compromise with us. I think they've made a tactical decision to talk to us. They have not made the strategic decision to compromise with us. And so the question becomes, how do we get them to that point? Well, as Liz very nicely described, we tried. When I was first in the Clinton White House at the NSC working on Iran, it was 1995-96, the period when the Clinton administration, of which I was a part and working on Iran, imposed comprehensive unilateral sanctions against Iran. And these sanctions hurt. Do not believe for a second that those sanctions were meaningless. They hurt Iran, and they hurt Iran to this day. But they haven't hurt Iran enough to force them to make that choice, to make it the way that we want them to. Later on, we tried in 1998-99, my second time in the White House, to bring the rest of the world on board because we recognized that the only way to put that kind of pressure on the Iranians was to get the support of the world, to get them on board with the same kind of sanctions, which could inflict the kind of pain on the Iranians that would force them to make that choice, the choice that they're trying to avoid. And what we found was that the rest of the world wasn't ready. And Nick and Liz tried the same thing during the Bush administration, and they found the same thing. And what we consistently heard over and over and over again was you have not made a good faith effort with the Iranians. You've not put a deal on the table that they might accept. You have not given them a chance to say yes. Now, the second thing that I want to do is to talk a little bit about what happens if we stop the diplomacy. Option one, we could do nothing. We could sit back and try to contain the Iranians and deter them once they've got nuclear weapons. I don't know about the rest of you, but that's a social science experiment I'd prefer not to run. Another alternative is regime change. We go in there and we decide we're going to get rid of the government. And the way that people typically think about regime change in Iran is we're going to spark a popular revolution. And people say that because the truth is that, as best we can tell, most Iranians don't really like their government, and they'd like to see it changed. The problem with this is that revolutions are very unpredictable, and they're very rare. And the last option that's out there, and I don't think anyone on the panel is arguing for this, but let's remember it, is war. Okay? We can try airstrikes against the Iranian nuclear program. But don't think that this is going to be a quick surgical strike. Okay, the Iranian program is big, it is dispersed, it is hardened. It is going to require hundreds, if not thousands, of sorties to take down that program. And most of the intelligence people I've spoken to, including the Israelis, believe that even a wildly successful strike would probably only set the program back by one or two, maybe, if we got really lucky, 3 or 4 years. These are all paths that we may have to confront at some point in time, but I'd suggest to you that we shouldn't do so until we have made damn sure that there is no diplomatic solution. We're not there yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken Pollack. This is an Intelligence Squared debate. I'm John Donvan, your moderator. We have two teams of two members each debating this motion, diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. As you recall, when you came in, you were asked to vote on the motion, diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. It's a three-way split. 34% are for the motion, 33% against, and 33% undecided. And reminding you that the way we predict, the way we call victory is the team that moves the most minds during the course of an evening, and so it's really a horse race at this point. On to round two, and in round two, the debaters address one another. They take questions from you, the audience, and also questions from me. I want to begin with this. It seems as though we have a very basic disagreement on the facts when we hear Liz Cheney talk about repeated overtures and Nick Burns arguing against the motion, saying that there has been no diplomacy. There is no diplomacy with Iran. And I want to kind of get to, which is it? Has there been a lot of diplomacy? Have there been many efforts? Or has there been, Nick, you more or less said nothing. Respond to Liz's claim that there have been repeated overtures.
Oh, I think I said that, you know, since 1979-80, there have been lots of individual meetings, I think, between Americans and Iranians. I think every administration has done that.
But why is that
there
not diplomacy?
No, that's not diplomacy. That's not what we mean by diplomacy. There have been no sustained discussions on the nuclear issue. Take my example. I served in the Clinton administration, and I served in the Bush administration. In the Bush administration, I had the responsibility for trying to put those negotiations together. And we were not able to do that. We didn't meet with anybody. We didn't have extended discussions with the Iranians. We never got in the room with them in a meaningful way. That's what diplomacy is. It's actually trying to figure out what the other side is up to, what their bottom line is, seeing if it's right for us and smart for us to make a deal. And I just pose the following question based on that. If you're not for diplomacy now, then what are you for? You can't say you're not for war, because you'll then leave President Obama with one option. If we leave the diplomatic field right now, the Europeans, the Russians, and Chinese will not support us on sanctions. You're leaving President Obama with one choice. Go to war. Third war for the United States of America in the Middle East.
Liz Cheney.
Well, I think, first of all, Nick is mischaracterizing Dan's and my view on this. Dan and I are not arguing that we should abandon diplomacy or that we should not undertake diplomacy. Dan and I are simply arguing that the current diplomacy is going nowhere, and it's going nowhere because it's flawed diplomacy. And part of the problem with the current diplomacy, one of the reasons I believe it's going nowhere is because there's a fundamental misunderstanding about the nature of the regime. You know, President Obama gives a Nehru's message to the Iranian people, but also to the regime, and he talks about things like common hopes and common dreams. I don't believe that we have any common hopes or dreams with the supreme leader in Iran. I don't. I think the supreme leader in Iran believes in exporting terrorism. He believes in exporting his Islamic revolution. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to ask yourself, you know, as Kissinger was asked, is Iran a country or are they a cause? If Iran is a cause, if they are a hegemonic, revolutionary, terrorist, extremist power, and they're attempting to gain a nuclear weapon, then we are being dangerously naive and irresponsible to pretend that we have no history here of trying to talk to
them. Let me bring another side.
I would just say,
Nick Burns.
It's important to note that this famous meeting that Liz has now cited twice took place 30 years ago. Not exactly in modern times. I'd also say this in defense of President Obama. I think he's actually outpointing the Iranians. He's put them on the defensive. That Nauru's message was not to the supreme leader. It was to the Iranian people. And I think it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense to stretch out a hand to the Iranian people over this chasm of three decades. What has President Obama done? The Nauru's message. He invited Iran to a UN conference on Afghanistan. He said that the United States, for the first time, would join these negotiations unconditionally, which I happen to think is the right thing to do right now, because our prior policy didn't work, with the Iranians. And so, therefore, it's hard to argue that diplomacy is going nowhere when President Obama has taken baby steps to put us maybe into the first phase of diplomacy. I would submit that we've all got to give him at least 6 months to try diplomacy before we denounce it.
Can I ask a question? Go ahead.
I just want to make one quick point, which is that our opponents need to decide what their position is. Their position is either diplomacy hasn't started, which is what they both argued when they made their opening presentation. It hasn't started. It's going to start this summer. Give it some time. Or their position is, well, diplomacy has sort of started with some baby steps. You know, they got to choose one of those.
Ken Pollack, your opponent's calling for clarity on your position.
Yeah, look, I think that to say, have they started yet? Are they just taking baby steps? It's a difference without real substance there. I think the point that we're trying to get at here, though, is that we don't really know what the Iranian position is. And more importantly still, the diplomacy is about more than just Iran. In fact, the most important objects of our diplomacy are, as Nick was suggesting, as I suggested, our European allies, our East Asian allies, the Russians, the Chinese, everyone else who is probably going to have to come on board before the Iranians realize that they've got to make a serious decision.
But isn't that diplomacy about Iran as opposed to diplomacy with Iran?
But both of them are interlocking because the rest of the world is not interested in us only having diplomacy with them without also trying to engage the Iranians. That's what they want. That's the carrot for them.
Actually, it's not fair to say the rest of the world wants us to talk to Iran. I think that you've actually got a situation now. You saw it during the election where you had the British, for example, demonstrate extreme nervousness with the notion that suddenly the United States was offering direct, unconditional talks, which is basically leaving our European allies aside. Our European allies have been with us in the European Union 3. We've been working on a multilateral course for diplomacy. Direct talks cuts them out of the picture. We haven't even talked about our Arab allies. And the notion that the Arab nations today want us to talk to Iran, you know, is a fallacy. Their concern is so great that we've sent our Secretary of Defense out to calm them down. So the idea that the rest of the world wants us to talk to Iran fundamentally mischaracterizes the danger of this new openness and this unconditional...
Liz,
I think we have a fundamental disagreement here.
The fundamental disagreement that I certainly have with Liz
is that I spent most of my time between 2005 and 2008 shuttling to Paris and London and Moscow and Beijing on this question. Those partners of ours want us to have talks with Iran. When we conditioned in 2006 our entry into negotiations on Iran suspending its enrichment program, it gave the Iranians an excuse not to come to the table. Obama has taken away the excuse, which is one of the reasons why I'm impressed by his sophisticated diplomacy. And I can tell you for certain that the European allies agree with this and that they are ready to negotiate with us on that basis.
Ben Senor.
So the question then becomes, Nick, if the Americans have taken away the excuse, how long before the Iranians reciprocate? I mean, how long? You said 6 months. Are you giving 6 months for them to agree to come to the table? Are you giving them 6 months once they agree to come to the table, then they have 6 months to figure out whether or not we can get a deal?
You know, Ken and I are not arguing that diplomacy is a panacea. We're not naive. We know that diplomacy might not work, but if you try diplomacy and give it a shot, then it does strengthen us for what's ahead. What's ahead of us? Two major options to deal with Iran. One is to go back to very tough sanctions of the type that we haven't tried before because we haven't had the credibility to convince the rest of the world to do it. And finally, the use of force. And I've said we should leave the use of force, the threat of it, on the table. We should threaten sanctions, but you got to go through this diplomatic process first to get to either of them. If you don't do that, you have no credibility.
What's on the table is that the Iranians don't want negotiations. Dan Senor said chasing Iranians to the negotiating table. Ken Pollack, do you think anybody in Iran wants negotiations?
I think the problem is that the Iranians do want negotiations. It's not clear that they actually want a deal. Look, we're not the ones writing out the policy for the administration. If we were, we'd be glad to engage this question of exactly when. For the purposes of this debate, for the abstract expression of it, I think that the key point is, again, what will it take to get the allies signed up for the tough sanctions? If it's 6 months of making a good faith effort, fine. If they say nine, fine. Now, we can't let it go forever. And for me, the big question mark is, can we get them signed up to harsh sanctions in advance based on when the Iranians pass certain milestones? That ought to be the key question.
But that's really, let me make a point there, because that is an important point. And actually, we did that. We had them, as Nick well knows, signed up in advance for tough negotiations in 2006 when we offered direct negotiations. The deal was that the allies would agree ahead of time that they would support tough sanctions on the Iranians if the Iranians did not agree to suspend enrichment. The Iranians did not agree to suspend enrichment. We got Security Council resolutions, which the Russians in particular, as Nick knows because he spent hours and hours dealing with the Russians, managed to take every single tooth out of. But I think it's very important for people in the audience, first of all, to look at the wording of the resolution. The question is not all of the questions that Nick and Ken are trying to get you to focus on. It's not, should we go to war? It's not, should we do diplomacy or not diplomacy? The question is our current policy going anywhere? That's the question. And I find it really fundamentally irresponsible for Nick and Ken to act like, let's just give diplomacy a chance because we haven't done it before.
Now, what happened in 2006 when the United States government made the most ambitious offer we'd ever made? And I really commend President Bush and Vice President Cheney and Secretary Rice for authorizing that. We made a very good offer, and the Iranians turned it down. That's the Iranians' fault. They walked away at that time. But what happened is that we did not have explicit promises from the Russians and Chinese, much less the Germans, French and British, as to what type of sanctions would follow. And so what Ken and I are arguing is that it would, I think, behoove itself to President Obama to make a very explicit deal with Moscow and Beijing. Before the United States sits down at the negotiating table, the Russians and Chinese will specify the type of sanctions that would ensue should negotiations fail. That would be a stronger position than we had in the Bush administration.
Yeah, but this is news. Nick just made news. Because this policy was actually sold internally because people were told that we had commitments that there would be sanctions if the Iranians, in fact, did not suspend enrichment.
Liz, now, you're misunderstanding what I said.
It's semantics about specific sanctions.
I'm
telling you what I know.
Okay. Why don't you continue?
What I know is that we had a commitment from those allies that we would go to sanctions, that they would support tough sanctions if, in fact, the Iranians refused to suspend. The Iranians refused to suspend, and we got no tough sanctions.
The word tough is not accurate. I negotiated that deal ahead of time.
You negotiated for weak sanctions.
No, I didn't. I mean, let's be fair about this, Liz. Let's be fair about it. I served in a Democratic administration and a Republican administration. The policy of both President Clinton and President Bush has not worked. And so what President Obama is trying to do is to create a new type of diplomacy. It is very tough-minded. It allows us to fall back on military force if we have to, but it does give diplomacy a chance for the first time. So if Liz and Dan say diplomacy's failing, President Obama's failing, then I think what they're really doing is leaving him with one option, and that is war, and they can't deny that.
Dan, Burns just made the point. Why not give it a chance? It's a new initiative, and he says in a new style, why not give it a chance?
Because it takes two parties to participate in a diplomatic process, and right now there's only one party participating in it. So we can call and call and call all we want, But they're not participating. And I know we're asking everyone here to vote on this motion, as Liz alluded to earlier. The Arab world, which is closest to this, is already voting. The Arab world is deeply concerned that the message the administration is sending is it's going to cut some sort of grand bargain potentially with Iran at best, and at worst leave an open-ended process, which is this: we're calling and calling and begging them to come to the table and they're never responding, and oh, by the way, the clock runs and a nuclear bomb appears at the end of the day.
Ken Pollack.
If I could, first, let's, you know, you've accused us of mischaracterizing. Let's not mischaracterize what the Arabs are saying either. They are concerned about the negotiations. They are not saying don't offer to talk to the Iranians. They are not saying don't talk to the Iranians. What they're saying is when you talk to the Iranians, do this and this, and you better tell us everything you're doing, and you'd better not do the following things. Second, as Nick pointed out, the answer to the issue is not that we only have two people at the table and one won't come. There is a third party in the room, as we keep trying to point out. That's the entire international community. And the question I would put back to you and to Liz, Dan, is basically this. You are saying you want tough sanctions. How do you plan to get those tough sanctions without going through diplomacy?
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. The motion up for debate is, diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. Stay with us. Gentlemen, right on the center aisle here, please.
I would like to hear the panel kind of debate and address. Make the arguments for what the Iranians have to gain by giving up this nuclear weapons and what they have to lose.
Ken, put yourself in the position of the Iranian government in a negotiation with the U.S. What do they want?
Look, I think the truth is that the Iranians don't want to be in these negotiations because they're very happy with the status quo. That's the regime. We're dealing with an Iran that is at least bifurcated. What the people want, what the regime want, are often two different things. And that's ultimately the goal of the diplomatic process, is to put the regime on the horns of a dilemma, to say to them, you can have what you want or what your people want, but not both. And what we've seen with this regime is, while they are autocratic, while they control absolute power in Iran, they are very sensitive to public opinion. And what their people want is a thriving economy. Their economy is in desperate straits at the moment. It is going down the toilet. Comprehensive international sanctions could push it over the edge, and the regime is extremely fearful of that. You can choose the path of darkness, you keep your nuclear program and your support for terrorism and everything else, and we will cripple your economy. And that is something that your people will not abide.
Dan,
or you can do it the other way, and we will make your economy thrive.
Dan,
I would just argue that it is true the economy is in desperate shape. 25-30% inflation right now, 25-30% unemployment. But if what Ken is stating, that the Iranian government is effectively going to make a rational decision and they can be won over with inducements, which is what he's saying, what package of inducements could we ever offer them, ever, that would be better than the situation they would get from having a nuclear bomb? I mean, think about this. A nuclear bomb would be able to guarantee that the U.S. would never threaten them again. We would have virtually no leverage. We would pose no threat to them. And as they try to further establish their own hegemony, as I said earlier, in the region, having a nuclear bomb would allow them to cement that. What inducements do we have to offer them that would be better than all that a nuclear bomb would give them?
I thought that was a rhetorical question, but Ken,
come on. Dan, do you really believe that even after the Iranians have nuclear weapons, we're going to let them take over the Saudi oil fields? We did a pretty good job of keeping the Russians out of Germany. I think we can keep the Iranians on the other side of the Persian Gulf.
Can I respond? Yeah. I mean, I think trying to – this is a classic fallback position, trying to compare the Iranian regime to other governments and other
situations. They're much weaker. That's my point.
Yeah, potentially. And there's also potentially an internal divide and fissures within the regime that's divided between those who are motivated by national interests and those that are radical theocrats that aren't terribly rational. And trying to figure out and game them out and hope that we can win over and resolve those fissures in the short period of time before they actually have a nuclear bomb, to me, is a pretty big gamble.
Question from the second row.
I have one simple question for the Burns-Pollack team. Can either Burns or Pollack point to any single thing over the past 30 years, including Obama's welcome mat of the last few months, that gives us any hope that history won't repeat itself and that diplomacy has ever gone anywhere?
I just fundamentally disagree with Liz and Dan that there's been diplomacy. It hasn't been diplomacy. We have not had sustained engagement with the Iranians. And the problem I have, and what I find slightly irresponsible about the other side's position, they want to strangle this current diplomatic initiative of President Barack Obama in its infancy. It's about 30 days old. I'm trying to strengthen us in arguing for this policy to find a way to deny Iran a nuclear weapons capability. If you start from the presumption that diplomacy is soft and weak and un-American, then I can't help you. I think we've got to stage this. We've got to think 15 or 16 moves down the chessboard. I think that's what President Obama is trying to do. Give him a chance, and let's show a little patience for diplomacy to play out.
I think the key... Neither Dan nor I are trying to strangle these efforts. In fact, we are very hopeful that these efforts will succeed. I think everybody on this panel wants diplomacy to succeed in stopping Iranian's nuclear weapons program. But I think that you have got to be realistic about what it will take to have that success. People need to look at how the Iranians in the past have described these discussions with us. In August of 2005, the chief Iranian nuclear negotiator gave an interview on Iranian television in which he explained in great detail and with great pride that he was using the negotiations in order to gain the time that they needed to get the nuclear program up and running.
I want to correct the record in one aspect. When Ahmadinejad was elected and sworn in August of 2005, and when the Iranian negotiator made those remarks, he was not referring to negotiations with the United States. We were not in negotiations. The British and French and Germans were. The Russians and Chinese were in it. The diplomacy has evolved. So to suggest somehow that because the European negotiations failed in 2005, the United States should therefore not enter negotiations is just not historically right.
But that's not what I'm suggesting.
In the way that Liz put it.
No, but I'm suggesting...
And I think that anyone who knows... I'm just going to finish my thought, if I could.
Yeah, please do.
I think that anybody who understands diplomacy and tries to learn from it understands that it doesn't occur over a 30 or 40-day time period. And here's the weakness in Liz and Dan's argument. They're arguing against something that has just begun.
Can I just...
Okay, your partner would like to add to that.
Yeah, I would just like to clarify one point, because there's clearly...
Is this in relation to the question or...
It's connected.
Looking back. Okay.
It's connected.
No, I don't mind. I just want to know what the framework is.
Nick and Ken keep setting up this false choice, either diplomacy or military action. And what Liz and I are arguing is we are all for diplomacy. We are for diplomacy that actually results in a diplomatic process beginning. The process has not begun. We believe that that diplomatic process will only get going if it is backed up by credible threat of military action. We are not arguing for military action, but we do believe that the Obama administration has to persuade our allies.
But I believe I've heard the other side say exactly the same thing.
But hold on. But
why all four of us are arguing for the motion.
Exactly. President Obama's strategy does not involve that. So if Nick and Ken want to come to our side and acknowledge
that
is the problem.
President Obama
has not made clear that military action is serious and credible.
Let me bring in Ken. Nick, because he hasn't spoken.
If I could, I mean, I think I was thrilled to hear Liz say that you guys are in favor, you want diplomacy to work. The question I would have for you is, what is it about what we're doing now that you think is inadequate? What more do you want to do? Because my guess is not only would we sign up for it, my guess is the Obama administration would sign up for it, too.
I don't know if the Obama administration is going to be inviting the Cheney-Senor team in to prescribe their policy on Iran, but hey.
We're glad to carry the message for you.
Change is coming to America.
It's the Middle East.
Sorry.
Nick.
I think that that Dan has not given President Obama sufficient credit. We haven't seen the full articulation of the policy. I have every reason to believe it's going to be very hard-headed and very tough-minded. It'll include all the things that all of us are talking about. So to suggest that somehow this is feckless, toothless, soft, ineffective diplomacy, when it's likely to include all the elements that Liz and Dan have suggested, I think is a little bit premature.
Liz Cheney.
How much time would you give the Iranians? How much time would you give the Iranians?
Liz, if you're in favor of diplomacy too, let us throw it back to you. How much time would you give it?
I would give it very little time.
How much?
And I would say, I would give it basically enough time that we could actually sort of test out the extent to which we're serious about using force. I mean, my own view is the window is closing pretty fast here. I would say, we're very close to the point where the Iranians themselves may in fact be near the point where any action that we take is insufficient to prevent them from actually gaining the value and the benefit of having the, at least the threat of a nuclear program.
So is that 6 months or 12 or 18?
You know, I'd say
But the question was actually put to you, Ken.
I know, that's why I'm putting it back to Liz, because she's saying she's in favor of diplomacy.
But do you have an answer to it?
Maybe the problem is just 3 months. Maybe Liz believes six and we believe nine.
My question is, when Prime Minister Netanyahu said the other day in a very undiplomatic way that if the United States doesn't take care of this, we are. Now, I thought that was shocking. That indicated that they think our diplomacy is sort of 1938 vintage with an umbrella and a V sign, and it's going nowhere. So if Mr. Netanyahu were here tonight, how would you assure him that he can maintain his confidence in the United States?
You know,
thank you. Nick Burns.
I'm glad you raised the issue, because we do have to talk about Israel here. I think one of the basic problems that the United States should have with Iran is the threats that Ahmadinejad has made against the Israeli state and the existence of the Israeli people. I fear that if the Israelis launched airstrikes, or if we did in the next couple of months, we wouldn't have ever tested the proposition that maybe diplomacy and sanctions backed up by the use of force could work. And we get ourselves into a position where we'd have the unintended consequences of war. We found out about that in Iraq. And so I would just say very respectfully to Prime Minister Netanyahu, and he has a right to raise this issue, he should raise this issue, that the United States should make a commitment to Israel that we will safeguard its security. They should allow President Obama, in my judgment, working very closely with Israel, to take the lead for as long as we think that this diplomatic path can be successful. There may come a time we want to end diplomacy and go to a tougher option.
Dan Sina.
I put Prime Minister Netanyahu in the same category that I put all of the regional players, or at least many of them, which they are deeply concerned about the mixed signals they're getting from this administration. Prime Minister Netanyahu is saying what he's saying because he is concerned that the administration is not backing up their diplomatic plan with a credible military threat to solve this problem if it doesn't go anywhere. It gets to a point here where these people are voting, and whether it's Netanyahu or the King of Jordan or the King of Saudi Arabia or the President of Egypt, there is deep concern in the region. And this is a profoundly violent and volatile neighborhood we're talking about, where wars often start because of misunderstandings and miscommunications and mixed signals and violent revolutions.
That concludes round two of our debate. So we're now in the final stretch, and soon you in the audience will be choosing the winner. Recall that at the start of the debate, we asked you whether you took sides with or against this motion: diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. Before the debate, it was an even split among the choices. 34% of you are for the motion, 33% are against, and 33% are undecided. And soon we will have you vote one last time, but we are going to go now to our third and final round. Each debater is given a brief amount of time to make a closing statement. And we will begin against the motion, Ambassador Nicholas Burns, former Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs.
I think we face a real threat in Iran, and we should be very tough-minded and very serious in facing it as Americans. And we should not leave military force out of this. We should leave that on the table. We should have the threat of sanctions hanging over the Iranians' heads. But if we give up now, I'm afraid we'll never know the answer to the question, was peace possible? Did we have the patience and ingenuity and the courage to believe in ourselves, to believe in our ability to be successful at the diplomatic table? I'm afraid that if we agree with Liz and Dan's position, we're really leading with the military, and we're forsaking diplomacy. President Obama has just begun his administration. He's just begun this diplomatic process, which is going to be quite complex. It's not going to go on forever. He needs to be given time, and we need to have the patience as citizens to let diplomacy play itself out, not forever. I think it would be unconscionable of us to go to war, to start a third war, without having given diplomacy a chance. That's our position. I hope you agree with it.
Thank you, Nick Burns. And summarizing for the motion, diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere, Liz Cheney, former State Department official overseeing Mideast policy.
I would venture a guess that I'm somewhere to the right of many people in the audience tonight, with one or two notable exceptions. But you don't have to be as hawkish as I am on this issue to realize that our current diplomatic track with Iran is in fact going nowhere. You really only have to agree with the testimony that Nick gave before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee last week. In his testimony, Nick very helpfully laid out steps that the Obama administration must take in order for diplomacy to go somewhere. He said, force must be on the table. President Obama needs to prevail upon Iran to freeze its nuclear research as the talks proceed so Iran does not steam ahead unimpeded. President Obama should set a timetable. And finally, Nick said, that it'll be crucial that the president agree on the automaticity of sanctions with the P5 countries, especially Russia and China, in advance of the talks. Now, I think we probably disagree on whether these steps alone are tough enough to convince the Iranians to give up their weapons. But it is indisputable that any of these steps are part of our current diplomacy. Therefore, as we debate the issue tonight and as you cast your vote, I would say don't be swayed by Nick's division of, you know, vote for them and you're voting for war and vote for us and you're voting for peace. What we're arguing is that the current diplomacy is ineffective, is going nowhere, because by Nick's own definition, it does not include the steps that it needs to include to make diplomacy effective. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz Cheney. And summarizing against the motion that diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere, Kenneth Pollack, Senior Fellow and Director of Research at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution.
I think there are two interesting things that are going on right here. In some ways, we're having two separate debates. On the one hand, I'm really heartened by what we've all agreed to over the course of the last hour and a half. I'm really struck by the fact that we all do believe that tough-minded diplomacy really is what this is all about. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of other people out there who aren't on this panel who will say, look at that sentence and say, yeah, you're right, time to go to war, or time to go to regime change, or something else. And I think that's what we have to be concerned with. And those people don't seem to be represented on this panel. And as far as I'm concerned, in the wider debate, the one that isn't going to be scored tonight in the U.S. public, that's the debate that we really have to focus on. Because diplomacy is the right way to handle things. It is the right way to start. If we don't start there, we're never going to end up anywhere that we want to be.
Thank you, Ken Pollack. And finally, summarizing for the motion, diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere, Dan Senor, Senior Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations.
We don't know exactly what will push the buttons of the Iranian people, or what exactly, none of us truly know, what will push the buttons of the Iranian regime. It is such an opaque society. And as Nick said earlier, when you're dealing with a society for three decades, we've had no communication, no interaction. It's very hard to know what's going on inside. So all we have to base this debate on is the history that we're aware of, the actual public statements of the leadership of the country, which should count for something, and the rhetoric they have used with regard to Israel and the United States and the West is apocalyptic. And thirdly, their capabilities, the capability that they are trying to develop right now in defiance of UN Security Council resolutions and in defiance of our effort to reach out to them. That is a dangerous, toxic combination. So,
Dan Senor, I'm sorry your time is up. I'll give you 10 more seconds.
A diplomatic process is fine as long as we are clear and we can make clear to the Iranians where it ends and how strongly we back up the alternative course in our negotiations.
We agree.
And that concludes round three of our debate. And now to declare the winner. You voted before the debate on whether you agree or disagree with our motion that diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere. You have now voted again, and here we go. Before the debate, 34% of you were for the motion, 33% against. Here are the results after the debate. 35% are for the motion, 59% are now against the motion, 6% are undecided. Congratulations to the side arguing against the motion. And, of course, to the art of persuasion itself. From me, John Donvan, and Intelligence Squared, thank you. This Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, presented by the Rosencrantz Foundation, was held on the campus of the Rockefeller University. Robert Rosenkrantz is chairman. Dana Wolf is executive producer. Maureen McMurray and Rob Christensen are the radio producers. Damon Whitmore is the audio engineer. And I'm your host, John Donvan. For more information or to purchase tickets to future events, visit intelligencesquaredus.org. Intelligence Squared is distributed by NPR, National Public Radio.